Oh, well. Have ham.
Have you heard anything more about Prosecco? I'm going to chase them next week.
No, because I think it'll just come very slowly, that. It's not going to be a rush.
They still need money, don't they?
No, I think funding's there. No, funding's there. And funding's there for Chipping Norton as well. That's all there already.
Okay. So Nathan and Inga from XHBA are doing Prosecco Hotel. Interior designers.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I didn't know who was doing it. Right, okay. They haven't started anything yet, though, have they? No.
I wouldn't imagine.
There's loads of people. Loads. Well, we cause quite a stir, don't we, you and me? It's good.
We should. I have no idea what Flower Lady was saying. No idea what Flower Lady was saying.
Don't know who she is.
The one opposite us. I have no idea what she's saying to us.
No idea who she is.
No. Crazy person.
Oh, really?
Who knows?
Okay.
Probably incredibly wealthy and is going to...
Oh, no, this one here. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Sorry, Penny hadn't dropped what you said. Okay, yes. Bit bonkers.
Yes.
That's all right.
It's all right. We need bonkers.
A few bonkers. Yeah. Makes the world go round.
Do we not get champagne?
Yeah, you can. I'm not. I can't on my drugs. Can't. You see my drugs regime.
Bag of drugs.
Huge bag.
Forever? No.
No. I don't know how long, actually. I guess until I get my health regime, which will most probably be Monday, Tuesday. So.
You'll just be radioactive for a while.
No, that's just today.
No, but you know, to sort of deal with it.
Yeah.
You'll go past. Plants will sort of...
We are.
Are you clicking?
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Goodness me, what a crowd. And I'm not surprised. Welcome to our design workshop this afternoon, kindly hosted by the World of Interiors, and in the most spectacular showroom on the third floor, perhaps in the whole design centre. Thank you so much, Sutherland Perennial Studio, for welcoming us this afternoon. And it's a fitting place to have our session, because today we're going to talk about paradise found inside and out. Our chair today is Sophia Salomon, who's the executive editor of the World of Interiors. And we've got a wonderful panel. Stephen Woodhams, garden designer extraordinaire, and Sanjit Bahra, who is known for his marvellous lighting. Please give them a huge welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Becky. I just wanted to welcome everyone to this beautiful Sutherland showroom, which is, I'm sure you all agree, is really stunning. So the talk today is really about how we live more busy and hectic and stressful lives these days. So I guess we're looking more towards nature and the outdoors to create more of a sense of calm and tranquility and kind of zen, whether that's being more in nature or bringing nature into the home in some ways and in our interiors or being influenced by it at home. So this is a question for you both. In your opinions, why do you think there is this growing trend to bring more outdoor features into the home and more of a sense of nature in the home?
I think always when people are, you know, it's turbulent times, lots of things are going on, I think people then revert back more to nature and natural things. I think you find that you get a great response from being in a garden or an outdoor space. And, you know, I know certainly in all the urban cities, not just London, that so many people nowadays on their particulars, if they're looking to buy a property, it's got to have an outdoor space, whether that's a balcony or a small garden.
I guess it's kind of a reassurance, isn't it?
Well, it's also about having a space where you can actually look onto, or you can actually go and potter in the garden. And that's such a, you know, that can take you, when you're even just looking at a garden, on a journey, if it's designed well, without going anywhere. You know, it can give you a sense of or a spirit of a place. You know, you might sometimes we do sort of gardens that have a certain identity. We haven't shown it on these pictures, but Sanjit and I worked on a roof garden many years ago where it was an African theme roof garden. Mm. And when you went up there, you just felt, oh, hang on a minute, this doesn't feel like London. This, you know, it had a different sort of feel about it. And I think nature's being pulled in nowadays into so many things. You've only got to look at what Sarah Burton's done with a new Alexander McQueen store on Bond Street. I mean, I walked in there the other day and I just couldn't believe my eyes. You know, there was this massive, great big piece of stone that she's put in the front of the showroom, which looks like one of the stones out of Avery, the Avery Ring, which I know the head office, I think, is in Wiltshire for Alexander McQueen. And then she, with all the clothes and all the designs, is inspired by nature. So that's got twisted wood running through it. Then she's got massive pieces of stone, which the engineering of how the hell they got it from either the street into the middle of the store, and the floor is amazing. And there's not, I could look for scratches or marks, but there's not one single mark. Just amazing. So I think, you know, everybody's really in design. You know, if you think about it, a lot of fabric design, a lot of, you know, general design, it gets inspired by flowers and plants.
Hmm. Absolutely. I guess it's a trend that will never kind of go out of fashion.
I think it's good. I think there's also an element of wellness. And if we think about where we're going to be in 5-10 years time, we are exponentially living in a more artificial environment. Lighting and wellness is a big concern about how lighting influences your well-being. And the future of architecture is going to be more vertical spaces and how to bring gardens into your vertical spaces. And we've seen sort of designs by the big architects to have sort of hanging gardens and to bring layers of gardens into spaces that you live in, because we don't walk in nature anymore, and a 5-minute stroll in the park isn't going to do it. It's, you know, oxygen levels and having a connection to something that's a little bit more natural and less artificial is really important to our wellness in the future.
So I guess it's all about kind of surrounding ourselves with it when we can, at home or having a garden or having a terrace.
Yeah. Well, I think also, you know, when you have a garden, you have that wonderful opportunity to also be able to work with your senses. So it's about colour, it's about fragrance. I mean, maybe we just talk about this image that's on the screen at the moment. This is the front of a house where it's quite formal, it's reasonably low maintenance. The standard wisterias in the big pots behind the box balls have seasonal flowering. This is when it's photographed with dahlias in the summer. But just a few weeks ago, that was absolutely solid with blue flowering hyacinths. And I'm not joking, when I drove into the driveway, it must be 2 weeks ago now, as soon as I got out of the car, all I could smell was hyacinths. And I was just like, and it transported me somewhere else.
Yeah.
Just because of the smell, I was like, wow, this is knockout.
It's amazing how powerful kind of a smell or a sight can be, can't it, to your memories and to your senses.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, Sandy said earlier about just now about the well-being, you know, the whole fact that you get that fragrance and you get that visualization, you know, it just puts you in a good space. It makes you smile. It makes you, you know, feel content, because it kind of, how can I explain it? It kind of wraps you up. It nurtures you. It makes you feel good because you're looking at something quite beautiful.
And it can transport you as well, can't it, somewhere else?
That's very true, yeah. I mean, this is an example of a project. This is quite a formal garden, but yet it's got a sort of a loose informality about it as well. These are the two dining areas, which are set up like this all the time, but if they're doing a big dinner, the tables get turned sideways, so that becomes a table, you know, of quite a considerable run.
It can be formal, but also convivial as well.
That's right. And then on the wall of the house is here. I haven't got the house in view at the moment, but the house is on the right-hand side, and that has an electric blind that comes out of the wall so that the whole table is also covered. Because, you know, last summer was a great summer in England. We had lots of sunshine. But there's nothing worse than sitting outside in the sunshine when you're eating your lunch. I like to sit in the shade when I'm eating lunch. So we thought about it, you know, to have the blind.
So what's, is that a pagoda in the corner?
Yes, we decided that we were going to design a pagoda, but it also had to be practical. So you can just about see through it that it's got a back wall to it, but it's open on the three sides. And then when you walk around the yew hedges and go around the back, it's actually a shed. You know, every garden needs a shed, I think. So, and that's for kind of various tools and storage, and they use that as a shed. But I wanted it to look like a pergola. It was a pergola structure, and it creates a vista, which is really nice.
I love the pockets of colour as well.
Yes, yeah, well, you just sort of hit the colour. And then,
this is at night time,
yeah.
Oh, it's amazing how the lighting makes it so atmospheric.
Well, the reason why I particularly love landscape lighting is during the daytime, you look at a garden in a very different way, but you can almost be very intentional and theatrical about how you present a garden at night. And you almost get two for the price of, well, not for the price of one, but two spaces if you are mindful about what you light. This is a really interesting thing because the client wanted lighting on the terrace, and a lot of people want lighting on terraces, and I'm very reticent as to how we do it because often it ends up feeling a bit floodlit. But the reason why this one worked is because we hid the spotlights in the awnings and it could sort of light downwards. And I think in gardens, more importantly than anywhere else, it's what you don't light that's just as important as what you do light. And it's about sort of layering the lights. You don't have things sort of popping out in the middle of darkness. And just leading your eye really gently through the landscape.
I mean, I think when we work together on our projects, I say all the time, but I don't need to now because we've done so many lovely projects together. But, you know, I always feel that the garden should look like moonlight, candlelight.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I don't want black pool illuminations. No. You know, that has its place, but not in our gardens.
But if you don't have moonlight, then I guess you have Sanjeet to help, no?
That's right, yeah. You see, this is the pergola list up here on the left-hand side. And then we did we've got a lovely outdoor kitchen on the right-hand image, which has got one of the egg barbecues. And then we've just underlit, or you did, underlit the bottom concrete shelf and then uplit the lovely flat-pruned tree, which really makes that area feel like it's its own little contained space.
The light in this image particularly is very warm.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, it's lovely.
I think with LED lighting now, it's developed so far that you get very warm colour temperatures. And actually, the other day, I compared a traditional halogen spotlight with a really good LED spotlight. And one of my designers was holding them up. And I went, oh, that's really nice. And it was the LED spotlight and
really?
Not the halogen. Yeah. So, you know, the products that you have available are really good, colour rendering and the warmth. And you can get like super warm, tunable whites. You can get them really golden if you want them to be. So we're at a point now where the quality of lighting technology is surpassed what we had before.
And you mentioned the furniture in the previous picture, the outdoor furniture. So we're here in Sutherlandshire, where they launched a collection, I think it was last year, with Morris & Co. That's their perennials collection, which was a fabric collection, which is suitable for both indoors and outdoors. And you see this kind of becoming more and more popular across furniture, across design, across different elements of design. Yep. And why do you think this has become, there's more of a demand for this?
I think it's because people just want that connection from inside to outside. And I think it's also, if you've, you know, some houses are getting smaller these days. So the idea of having an indoor space that looks onto an outdoor space, but you treat it in the same manner. So maybe the same floor surface runs from inside to outside. There might be a feature wall on one side that's a certain colour, and that can run literally on a wall from inside to outside. So whenever you're inside looking out, you kind of go, hang on, is that outside, is it inside? And it makes the whole space feel a lot larger. We often use a lot of mirrors in gardens because I think mirrors kind of give some interesting optical illusions. And if you do two mirrors literally opposite each other in a small space, when you look left and right, it goes on for eternity, which is kind of quite a fun thing to do. And then like here, for instance, within the timber decking there, we've actually put a stone inlay. So those chairs and that looks like a rug, but it's a stone rug within decking. And that's quite a kind of fun thing to do. And we can reverse that. We often do stone with then maybe just a timber insert. Which is the same as interior design, you know, putting a rug in a room.
Yeah, the feature.
It's the same, same kind of idea. Mm.
I mean, looking at the nighttime scape, Even in the winter, when you're not using a garden, the minute you light something outside, your eye is drawn beyond. Mm. And then suddenly your conservatory space or, you know, your large dining room doesn't end at the window where it becomes a black mirror and it reflects inside, and then you've got all your lamps and things in glass. You're looking beyond, and you feel like the outside space is within. And we've designed a couple of projects together where we've also talked to the interior designer about the finishes inside, the key signature colours that Stephen's then taken outside. There's a slide later on that we'll show, and there's a little accent of colour that we put in lighting. I'm very restrained use of colour in lighting, I think, is our ethos. But it just meant that when you're inside, whether you consciously or subconsciously, you just think, well, the narrative goes out. And little things like, you know, if you have a downlight in your ceiling and then you've got a sort of bit of an awning out there, you don't want separate fittings and a sort of a rickety, you know, IP-rated downlight in a canopy that you can see from inside. You want everything to just look smooth.
And you want that continuity in you as well.
And like if you've got an uplight inside and then it goes outside, you want the finishes to be the same. It all needs to feel effortless, and so that visually you're looking at the pretty things and not the things that don't look right.
Yeah, I guess your eye is kind of drawn to the outdoors and it becomes almost like a work of art. It's something beautiful to look at at night time when it's kind of illuminated.
Well, it becomes a, you know, like a piece of art, as you say, looking out the window, especially on that previous property. You know, you look out of the windows and at night the garden is your art out the window, you know.
Yeah.
And it looks amazing to see those gardens lit up when it's all covered in snow or thick frost, you know, because there's nothing worse than looking at a black hole, when you're looking outside. Yeah. I mean, and that's always the thing I say to clients, you know, whatever the budget is, please, 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 even though I can have two uplights, give me some lighting, because, you know, even with two uplighters, I can make quite an ordinary garden look a bit like $1 million with his help. So it's that, you know, you've got to always allow in your budget to be able to create a paradise and a beautiful garden space. And also invest, you know, I'm not just doing this because I'm in perennial showroom, but also invest in really good furniture, because if you do, I mean, my favourite pieces are these Louis style from Sutherland. You know, they're a French style of chair, and can you believe that's fully upholstered and you leave it outside 12 months of the year. I've had one on my pair on my roof terrace now for 8 years. And they just look amazing. Now they're all going to be silvery grey colour. And then again, that's where you can link in style, so that, you know, we've had gardens where, you know, I did a beautiful garden down in the south of France, and those chairs just worked brilliantly but people were like, outdoors, upholstered, are you mad?
They need to see it with their own eyes.
Yeah. Well, they have to also see me pour a bucket of water over it and wash it, see it run through, and then you sit on it. It's like, you know, and that's technology now. You know, there's so much more technology. And I think also that because, you know, the fabric choices, you know, perennials can now show you velvets, chenilles. I mean, the range is brilliant.
That's
so
incredible.
It's really worked.
And have you seen the same kind of trend in lighting as well, that people want the same, and obviously they want the same quality of what they have indoors for the outdoors as well? You just mentioned it previously.
Yes, I think it follows, it's twofold. I think what you do outside, simple things like the colour temperature, it's really about making sure that the eye and the feeling of what happens inside continues outside, that they don't feel like separate spaces. External spaces are tricky, because you need to have much more waterproof fittings. So traditionally, you would have thought that an outdoor fitting is bulkier and not as pretty. But we source light fittings that the interior ones are, and sometimes we actually bring the exterior fittings and use them inside, because if you've got an uplight, it still needs to be waterproof, because you're going to wash the floor. Yeah, and as long as you get the finish right, then we make sure that the whole thing blends together.
And you talked about kind of colours when you use lighting as well.
Well, that's the slide where we actually really worked quite well with the interior designer.
Yeah.
And if you talk about the water feature.
Yeah, well, this garden, to me, I think we could be in Miami or we could be somewhere far flung, but we're actually in Kensington. So, and I really wanted the theme, the client's wish was to have a kind of a French theme of a garden. So I kind of thought, well, okay, let's go with treillage and trellis. I love trellis. It's going to come back big time. And also trellis... The whole idea of using the lovely tree ferns was to my interpretation of palm trees. So it was that whole kind of French Riviera sort of feel. And then basically, this is a family garden, and the kids wanted to be able to play in it. I bet you didn't guess that that was artificial grass, but that's just so that we can jet wash it and clean it and the kids can play on it 12 months a year. And then that's what I call a safe water feature in the middle, which we have to do quite often, that water features have got to be safe for children to play on. So these are 9 squares with jets of water that just bubble out the middle. I mean, I tell you what, put the kids outside there, you don't see them for at least 8 hours. They just have such fun. And that's it at night.
And that, when it comes to coloured lighting, that was an accent colour that Stephen had in the planting, as also the interior designer had in the kitchen. So you're all the way back in the kitchen, even in the middle of winter, and you're preparing, and you just see a little signature of red right outside, and it sort of marries with what's going on inside. And I think the material of the stone,
travertine
was the same as the countertop. So it's those little things that just keep making it through. And I always say, if we can all three speak together, then what we create collectively is far better than what we do individually.
The success, I think, of any home and garden type projects, if you just work as a team, it's great fun. You have huge fun. And working with interiors, garden designs, lighting, we always have to add irrigation into that as well. You create a much more wholesome, proper project, you know, by working as a team.
So you mentioned the grass in the previous image that was something that the client wanted, something that was kind of easy to maintain.
Well, we guided them on that, because actually when we first installed this garden, there was massive trees at the back of the property, so there was quite a lot of leaf debris. And also Kensington and various parts of any urban city do have foxes. We can't get around that. You know, foxes are in urban cities. And we really want to make sure that we could jet wash it to keep it clean, because that garden only really works if there's not a leaf out of place. You know, it's quite kind of managed. And then this was an interesting idea here, where we've done the mirrors. This was actually a blank wall originally when we arrived at this site. And we actually copied the window frames of the actual architrave and the material that's used for the window frames. And we copied it from the windows on one side and then along here. And then we just put mirror in. So we get this magical feeling. You know, this garden feels so much bigger by
these
mirrors.
Yeah, it's lovely looking at the reflection as well, even sitting here.
And then Sanjit did a very cool thing with the balustrade.
Because it was a raised garden and there's little kiddies running around, we have to have a balustrade to stop them sort of hurtling themselves over. So we had a glass balustrade, and we thought, well, wouldn't it be quite fun to edge light it at night? And we did successfully, because we had a really good engineering team and a really good grant. But what it was is we had to recess an LED strip all around the perimeter. It has to be accessible. It has to be maintainable. The coping can be taken down. And what we did is we just frosted the outer edge of the glass balustrade. So at night, you've just got this sort of thin line that goes all the way around. And it's just really, really magical and really soft. But in order to make that look so easy, it took a lot of skill and effort and engineering.
Yeah. I mean, what's so great about that is where the glass actually sits in the channel to be secure. That's underneath, that is where the LED strip is actually fitted. And I mean, I was actually more excited than I thought I was going to be when I saw the final result. It buzzes at night. And also, don't forget, when you go up, you know, on the first floor, second floor, third floor of that property, when you look down, you get this amazing line of light that you see from the glass balustrade. It's just a little trick. And look, here's some more Sutherland furniture in this picture. We've used them around the table. And here, the actual dining room table that we had made for this project, again, going back to your reference earlier, was the same marble as the marble of the kitchen worktop. So again, when you looked out from that room, from the kitchen and the inside space to the outdoor space, you know, you really want to make sure that it feels like the walls just dissolve and you know, you're looking through and you're like, oh,
there's all that separation.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. By using the same materials, you then kind of think, well, is it inside, is it outside?
Do you feel that people kind of, as obviously, you know, our lives have changed quite a lot in the past few years, that people now want a garden which is kind of lovely to look at, but kind of low maintenance in that sense?
All clients tell me they want a low maintenance garden. No, I think that's still a big thing, but you know, I have to be really honest, you know, all gardens need maintenance. You know, anybody can put in a great garden, but actually it's the success of the design that then makes sure that it can be properly maintained. Because, you know, if you're investing in any outdoor space, you've A, got to make sure you can maintain it. It gives you great pleasure when you're using it, and it adds value, you know, to the property.
So is that something that you that's quite an important brief to go through with your client? That how much time they're going to spend on maintaining it, and how if they want to, and
definitely. In fact, one of my first questions always is, who is going to maintain this? And you need a budget for maintenance, especially when we're doing also our projects in Sanjit, and I are very fortunate to do some lovely Mediterranean gardens as well. Mm. And the first question there is, you know, where is your water coming from? Yeah, especially in the Balearic Islands, because we've really got to look after those islands and plant gardens that are sustainable and manageable. My big thing at the moment is cactus. Mm. I just love cactus.
Oh, really?
So you're going to be seeing loads of cactus gardens from us, because, you know, they're just so manageable. They don't need irrigation.
And they're very exotic looking as
well. Well, it's exotic, it's architectural, it's got very strong lines. Yeah.
And would you say that gardens kind of have kind of garden design has evolved over the past few years, that kind of what people want from a garden has changed as well and developed into something else, the kind of atmosphere they want to create in this kind of
I mean, I think it's continually changing. I mean, you know, gardens have evolved over you know, hundreds of years, and you know, we were very fortunate in England to have some amazing, you know, Gertrude Jekyll, and yeah, there's a whole host of female garden designers that are really, you know, Beth Chatto, who decided that she really wants to go into dry gardens. And there's been, you know, prairie planting has been a really big thing. I can't handle prairie planting myself. I kind of go, oh, no, it's not my thing. As you see from our designs, we're much more architectural, we're more structured. We're softening up in our old age, and we're also getting into colour as well, which is also quite fun. Some of my team now look at me and go, really? I can't believe we're getting into colour. But because, again, you know, some of the projects are quite monochromed or quite calm in their colourways. I mean, this was a really interesting project. This is the roof garden where you see where the chimneys are, the little chimney stacks are on the top of those sort of rectangular cupboards. Well, those were at one time chimneys for this particular property. But now they're completely defunct. You know, the way we heat our homes, the way, you know, stuff's done. So I said, what can we do with these? So I came up with this idea of chopping the wall out and actually putting kitchens actually into what was the old fireplace stacks. So we worked with McCarran and Co. and did really nice kitchens for both of those spaces. So that whole roof area now is completely self-sufficient. It's got wine fridges, it's got cooking, teppanyaki and grilling and everything. You can literally have a chef cooking out there if you wanted to, or cook yourself and have a lovely dinner up there.
Really fun. All singing, all dancing.
Yeah.
And can you think of any kind of particular features or focal points that you've created for a particular garden over the past year or month, or a few months?
Well, I mean, even on this, you know, we've highlighted things, you know, like Sanjit decided to uplight these beautiful cloud olive trees so that the structure was lit. I mean, obviously the kitchens had to be lit quite normally, interior design wise I'd say, because they've got to be practical, you've got to see what you're cooking. But the rest of it is quite mood lighting. I mean, I think nowadays we're also bringing a lot more, let's say, the same containers, like pots or containers, that we use inside, and then we'll also use the same pot outside. So again, you're creating vistas or views. And you know, I think also I'll be quite fair to say there's a lot of things that we're putting into gardens now, maybe pieces of sculpture or a feature tree, which then Sanjit gives a really good kind of lighting effect to it.
And would you say, I mean, I'm sure you work internationally, would you say that kind of, ranging from country to country, the lighting changes, and that's something that you have to take into consideration as well when you're planning the design for a particular garden?
Well, that segues really nicely. Yeah. Cool. I Donna, so that's what you do in a London terrace, in a London home, in an urban space, yeah. Because your garden basically starts the minute you walk out. And talking about terraces, a lot of clients say, well, I want my terrace lit. I'm like, well, if you have your interior lighting on, the bleed is going to be significant enough that if you have a party, you can stand on your terrace and you don't want to be lit. You want the garden to be lit. But then immediately next, ongoing, there's going to be quite a lot of layers of garden that can afford to have quite a bit of lighting into it. But then the approach in the countryside would be very different, where there is a very, the blend between the interior, the terraces, and the outside. You don't have, you sort of have lawn and you don't have borders that you can hide lights in. I think the approach needs to be a lot softer in the countryside. In the English countryside, for example, it should be softer and it shouldn't be lit like London. And some of the gardens are very large in the English countryside. And I've said to the clients, well, you're not going to use those spaces at night. Just because you have all of these spaces, they don't need to be lit. And a lot of clients get very anxious when a London lighting designer comes on board and think, oh my God, are you going to just overlight and make my garden look like not a showroom, but some sort of glitzy space? I said, no, actually, per square foot, we light less in the country than we do in London. It's not about it's about how you should do things. And this is a Mediterranean garden where we had to be mindful about, A, what they're able to install, because we can't just, I mean, I'd love to hop over every weekend, but you can't. So you have to make sure that the solutions you give them are achievable and maintainable. And also, a little light goes a very long way in those sort of places. So we just, in this particular one, just had a few little guide lights, a few little mood lights, and really soft, really, really soft.
But this was also, this is obviously the main pathway up to the front door. And, we mounted some lights up in the trees just to give soft pools of light.
Lovely, because it's olive tree. I mean, yeah, it's quite
lovely,
dramatic.
Lovely old olive tree. Beautiful. Yeah. Well, nice just to light the trunk and whatever. And then what I love about is, in this particular project, Sandy, when you lit this, was that, for me, the lighting's got a lovely soft pace to it. So, where you've got some downlight from the tree, then you've just this beautiful, must be 100-year-old wall or something on the left-hand side, and we've then just got a few uplighters to feature it.
Well. Yeah.
And I love this wall because it's got a, in the top of it, it's got a planter. So we've got all different succulents and things growing in it, which are really lovely.
Do we have any more pictures of this?
And because it was, it was in the Balearics, there wasn't a control system. It's very, very simply switched. So there wasn't this sort of complicated Lutron system, because the client isn't there all the time. You don't live like that on an island. You may live like that in sort of Kensington, and it doesn't, you don't need that extra layer of complication that should something go wrong, you're not going to get someone to fix it. So it was just about the management, using the right LED light sources. I mean, those uplights are sort of 1.2 watts. A little light goes a very long way in spaces like that.
They're beautiful. And in the previous picture, the colour of the earth, the red, is really striking too.
Well, I think in these gardens, we also have to be, I think you have to be very aware of light pollution. It's a very fine line that we have to straddle to get that. I mean, this is a bit mad because we've got trees on the roof, which is quite exciting. So we've kind of lit those up. But when you see the rectangular panels, which Sanjit lit, we designed these. Each panel actually is 4 meters long by 2 meters wide, and they're actually made of Corten steel. And they literally have a hole in the middle that the water is pushed up, and then they act as trays, which are completely full of water. And then the water cascades down the side. So when you're walking around on ground level, you just see water running, because these LED lights are literally around the edge. And then when you go higher up, they're just these lovely rectangles.
And it just shimmers.
Lovely.
Yeah, it was really...
Sounds really, very calming as well, hearing water too.
Yes, I mean, that's it during the day. And actually, I can't believe that photo, because let me tell you, those plants have grown like 20 times that size now. It really has grown. That's a very early shot.
And again, it was before they went round and de-weeded it. But what it shows in any sort of country garden is there isn't a hard scape between where your garden ends and where nature goes. And it was really important about light pollution, because across the bay there were some restaurants, and you don't, a lot of these clients don't want their houses advertised, and yeah. it's about sort of looking inward and having the light for you. But when you drive past, you know, these trees aren't lit, and you sort of, you don't see
it's
your space.
It's quite subtle as well.
It's very private. It's private, very sort of,
yeah.
And where we position the lights is also important. So that if you're lighting a tree, it's on the inner face of the property, and we keep it really subtle.
And when you're working with a property like this that has this view, is that something that you take into consideration too, when kind of designing the garden, the lighting?
Well.
I certainly can't compete with what's out there, and I don't profess that we even try. But I mean, this garden, we had some fun because we did these lovely, very large, overscaled rectangular planters out of Corten, and then each one was planted with one variety of Echeveria or succulents. So this is what I call the succulent museum on this particular project.
And what are the trees?
These are all pine trees.
Are they all pine trees?
Yeah, and the fragrance from those is just awesome. Once we get the heat of the summer.
It's a very Mediterranean smell, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was an outside sort of seating, dining, barbecue area. So
underneath the pine tree.
On the full setting, we sort of uplit the tree, and in Stephen's more urban gardens, we'll light the trunk and make it much more architectural and sculptural. Whereas here, we don't want to light the trunk. We want to light sort of the branches and and the canopy, so it sort of just floats like a cloud. And then within that, we also had some downlights to light onto the terrace. So, you know, when they had parties, they could have that as a sort of a lit space. And when you're standing out there, you could just look across the bay.
And also what was interesting with this particular project, when you're doing gardens in the Mediterranean, there is, and that's when you then start working with the architect, there are rules and regulations for how much hard surfaces you have. You can't put down necessarily paving or stone or concrete everywhere. And also this tree was so important to the client. When they brought the house, there was a lovely long table under it, and they were so determined that we kept that identity of it, but we needed a hard surface, so we decided actually to timber deck it, so that
so it kind of becomes a bit of a focal point.
It's a pure circle of decking, edged to get in Corten, which ties in with the planters, and also that's great because it lets the water through, so we've got no problems with that tree getting the same amount of water. I mean, we were a bit nervous, but we took the risk, and it's 5 years down the line, 6 years down the line, and we're sort of happy pine trees, so that's okay.
So with a property like this, are there constrictions when it comes to kind of water, like how the property would have access to water? It's not obviously not the same as in, you know, an urban space.
Yeah, well, Mediterranean gardens, and certainly in Mallorca and Ibiza, we said earlier, that for me is the first question I ask, you know, about maintenance. And then, you know, where is the water going to come from? I mean, this particular project has to have water delivered on a weekly basis to look after this garden. Yeah, that's
so it's limited.
So I think we're definitely changing. You know, this was a project we designed maybe 7-8 years ago. We're now doing gardens where we're much more conscious, and we need to be, because we've got to look after the islands, of using plants that are sustainable and will enjoy and grow naturally without too much irrigation. Or
I guess
any irrigation.
Is that something that you're kind of thinking about in urban properties as well? Everyone's kind of quite environmentally kind of, you know.
I think you could do it a little bit in. It's more difficult in urban spaces
because of the climate.
Well, and also if you're in a an apartment building, and we've got a balcony, you've always got often quite a lot of overhang of buildings. So and people just think, just because it's rained, we don't have to water our pots and our terrace. I put my hand up. I didn't have a chance to water a pot on my terrace last weekend. We had those 65 miles per hour wind, and I had a broken £600 clay pot smashed all on the terrace.
Okay.
And it's just like, anyway, I've learned my lesson. I'm going to put a copper pipe through it and affix it through to the railings now, so that won't happen again. But, you know, you just don't know sometimes, you know, these things happen.
So is this the same property that we were just looking at? It's
lovely. I think this garden and the house, it just looks magical at night, and I think that's a word. I think, you know, gardens need to look magical when they're lit at night.
Yeah, almost enchanting, don't they?
Yeah.
That element, especially in the summer with all the scents and the flowers and the trees.
Yeah, very much so.
It's lovely. Well, thank you, boys.
Thank you. Okay, thank cool. you.
Does anyone have any questions?
Hello there. Yep.
Is there a safer product? I'm thinking of children in that kind of environment.
You can get, and we have used, actually not on these projects, but we have used an acrylic Perspex mirror, which you can get. It doesn't have quite the same clarity of mirror effect. Yeah, if you're worried about kids, you know, driving a bicycle into a mirror or whatever, that that could be an issue. But again, you know, when we're designing a garden like that, we'd be thinking about that the mirror wouldn't go all the way down to the ground. Maybe there'd be a different material and the mirror would start higher up. So we'd get around that issue there. But and, you know, there's a lot of people that are also quite nervous of using mirrors because birds fly into mirrors. Well, you know, birds fly into panes of glass, you know, so again if you do have that issue, you might have to just put some markers on the mirror just so that it doesn't stop the birds doing that. I mean, I you know, animals are incredible. I've got a small little cottage in Oxfordshire, and this last few weekends, every morning I've had this blue tit tapping on the glass of the window. I'm like, get out of here, and I appear and he stops. But you know, it's like, why is he doing this? I think it's something that he can see inside that he's trying to get at. I haven't worked that one out yet, but just consider.
So you said you don't want your patio or whatever to be... You said you don't want your patio area to be floodlit as such. So are you getting most of your effect from uplanted ground?
It's more that when the client, it's trying to understand what the client's needs are, and immediately they sort of say, well, they think, well, we're going to dine on this rather large terrace that sort of spills out from our living dining space, so we want light on here. They think that's what they want, but actually, if you do give them that, they're going to feel incredibly floodlit, and it's not great. And same with security lighting. A lot of the times the security consultant says, well, we need floodlights on the facade elevation. We try and sort of, we understand that you do, but what we can say is that if you have all your garden lighting on, that in itself can be a deterrent to people. So it's the layers of what the request is and how we respond to it. But on the whole, I mean, that particular project, the client did want lighting onto it, but I only do it when the glare angle is straight down. The minute you start tilting the lens, you know, you could be sitting here and there's a spotlight there, and then that gentleman there is going to have it in his eye. And there's nothing worse, because your eye always goes to the brightest point, and that is accentuated at nighttime when you're in a dark space. So if you're sitting on a table and there's a spotlight there and catching your eye, it's going to irritate you, and it's going to make an unpleasant experience. And if you're dining outside, sometimes candles on tables can be amazing.
Just as good. Yeah.
Well, we've done terraces where we've sort of hidden spotlights in the trees, and they light down. And you know, it's making sure that the glare angle is right. There's a new table lamp now that sort of lasts for days, and it's sort of it's battery operated, and it's a proper table lamp, which means you can actually bring it out to pool sides, dining spaces, and get that softness that you get from inside outside. Yeah.
I think we've got time for one more question.
Come on, don't be shy.
You mentioned lighting, and that the thing that you don't like is just as important as the thing that you do like.
Yes.
So how do you go about deciding on what not to light? And if you could elaborate a bit more on that.
It's a conversation with the landscape designer and the client, and understanding the brief that they want to achieve. So it's the sort of back and forth that we have, and we say, so what about this? What are the pathways? How are you going to navigate the space at night? How do you want to view it? Where do you not want to light? So
it's a continuous dialogue, backwards and forwards. I mean, that's usually in the early planning stages. And then what's really lovely, I think, is that we always try and make sure we have this opportunity, especially if it's in Ibiza or Mallorca, that we have to go and do another site visit, you know. And then you put everything in and you allow for a few extra circuits. So if we feel we need to up it here or maybe pull it, you know, we've even done some designs where we've put the whole scheme in and we've gone, So it's a bit bright over there, and we've adjusted it. We've even taken fittings out and put them somewhere else. Yeah. You know, you know, we can all plan to the eighth degree, and we have to do that because we have to be on budget, we have to be on time, etc., etc. But you know, you need also that ability of a bit of spontaneous on-site creativity, because then that can just make that project really sparkle if you put that extra bit of effort in.
And for example, in that project, there was this wonderful olive grove that we saw a few, and there was a mixture between old olive trees and cloud olive trees, and we sat together and we sort of said, we lit not even every other one, but just a few, and we planned it out. But until we went to site and we saw what the viewing angles were,
couldn't have redone that.
We sort of moved it around. But it was a case that we didn't light every one, because, and if you underlight things as well, that's a danger that suddenly you've got a sculpture hovering in the nightscape, and then something there, and it all feels a bit desperate. So I always say, if you haven't got the budget, then spend it wisely in one vista and don't spread it thinly. Better to do that than just have things dotted around.
Cool. Any other questions, anybody?
No? Cool. I think we could be here all afternoon. I think we should settle in and spend our time.
Well, we've got lots of gorgeous food and everything
here.
So
we're in the company of some award-winning experts here. And goodness me, haven't we covered a lot? Collaborations, working as a team, that seemed to come out a great deal. Connection, linking inside and outside, bringing in some beautiful furniture, bringing in some beautiful fabrics. Artistry, I love the fact of framing, looking out of a window and seeing your garden through the window from inside. And you spoke a lot about less is more. You know, it's what you don't light is as important as what you do light. And I love the fact of having a moonlit garden. We are so lucky to have had such an enjoyable 45 minutes. I know that we have got some lovely treats and food that Sutherland have kindly put on for us. Please thank Sophia and Sanjit and Stephen for such a wonderful afternoon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. That worked well.
Yeah, it's cool. Thank
you very much. Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, we improvised a little bit.
Yeah,
it was lovely seeing some of the properties that you've done. Really useful.
Yeah. We're lucky that we get to nice
plant. We like the way that you did
another one?
Okay.
Saying 10 out of 10.
Oh,
yeah. Sweet. 10 out of 10. Sweet.